Hello, I'm Dan Masterson, host of Strategy Talk, where we take a unique view of world events. We report news as history. With me today is the editor of StrategyPage.com and well-known military author, Jim Dunnigan. Associate editor and syndicated columnist, Austin Bay, also joins us.
Welcome, Jim and Austin. It's good to be with you this morning. Our friends in Iran suddenly popped up in the news again. They've been lying a little bit low. I looked over what we've been reporting lately, and we hadn't really reported much on them for a while other than their nuclear plants coming online. Jim, what do you think really is happening here with this plot to take out the Saudi Arabian ambassador?
Well, there's several things you got to keep in mind in light of this. First, the Iranians have done stuff like this before. They were nailed for the bombing of a Jewish social center in Argentina back in the 90s. When that was laid on them, they sort of backed off that kind of adventurism. Secondly, this sort of stuff is done, as was mentioned in most of the media reports, by the Quds Force. Now, the Quds Force, which we have reported on a lot, it's described as a special force, but basically it's an organization belonging to the cleric's private army, the Revolutionary Guards, that specializes in organizing terrorist attacks overseas. They were very active in Iraq. They're now active. They have always been active in Afghanistan. Thirdly, the Quds Force and the Revolutionary Guards increasingly are operating independently of the clerical dictatorship. Now, the government in Iran is a clerical dictatorship, but it's not your normal dictatorship. The senior clerics, by law, which they managed to sneak through during the war in the 1980s, gives them veto power over the government, which is elected. But the elections don't make much difference because the clerics have to approve all candidates. So in the last election, anybody who was, to the left of Attila the Hun could not be, or stand for election. So it's a very conservative parliament. The president also has to be approved, but Ahmadinejad, whom the clerics at first thought, hey, he's a good guy, he breathes fire, he hates Jews, he says nasty things about the Americans. But Ahmadinejad turned out to be popular also because he had cleaned up corruption when he was, he was mayor of Tehran. The clerics don't like that because they are enormously corrupt. They and their families control much of the economy. They steal. The usual story. And this is very unpopular in Iran. So you have a situation here where you have a Quds Force whose mandate is to basically organize terrorist operations outside of Iran that cannot be traced back to Iran. Oh, yes, that's another thing Quds is supposed to do. They're not supposed to let Iran get the blame for this sort of thing. Now, if this current situation, some people are saying, oh, it's the Americans being paranoid, et cetera, et cetera. No, it appears, because the Attorney General came out, with a very straightforward, statements about this incident. Apparently, there is a lot of evidence. Apparently, they called in all 100 senators to a classified hearing to hear some of the secrets. The Saudis, who are nervous about, getting involved in too much hostility with the Iranians, the Arabs have for thousands of years been afraid of the Iranians, usually for good reason. They have come out and said, hey, we believe it. So it's going to be quite a media circus. No evidence, hard evidence, has been provided to the general public, and none may ever be, because then you basically have methods and sources problems. In other words, you don't want to expose your methods and sources, because then you burn them, as the saying goes. You can't use them anymore. You might get, if it's sources, you might get somebody friendly to you killed. And if it's a method, the enemy will figure out a way to counter that method so it doesn't work anymore. So obviously you want to keep secret exactly how you snookered the Iranians. But if it does turn out to be true, it's very bad for the Iranians, especially what's really killing the Iranians in this particular situation is that if there is good evidence putting it on them, it will be bad for them, which I guess in a more global sense is a good thing.
Right. Austin?
Well, yeah, I'll tell you what. There are a few interesting tidbits that have been let out, and the tidbits, at least a couple of them, are traceable to U.S. senators that were in the briefing that Jim mentioned, at least their offices. I know one senator is Dianne Feinstein, said a couple of things on the record, and her memory is vague, but I don't know. You can judge it for yourself. She said that there were suggestions that this was just one of several other ongoing plotting activities by the Iranians that have been picked up by American intelligence and the security organizations. Let me just hold that thought for a minute and talk about what we've done with Iran over the years. The 1996 edition of A Quick and Dirty Guide to War that Jim and I did, I think if you total it up, we talk about Iran being involved in 17, if I'm wrong, I'm close, 17 different ongoing conflicts. The 2008 edition, and you can follow this, of course, through strategy page. I think we added a couple, but we're still in the same zone. And the 96 edition was put together in 95, and that's what these guys were up to. They've been at war with virtually everybody, but specifically war of the United States since 1979 and the Ayatollah Khomeini's revolution, but at war with their neighbors, attacking the United States. Look, Khobar Towers, the Saudis believe, is an Iranian operation. Remember the blowing up of the apartment buildings that were used as a temporary housing for American service people in Khobar, right there near Dahran. That I believe it was 1994 when that attack occurred, and the Saudis traced it to the Iranians. That was a direct attack with deniability. Obviously, we've never been totally able to pin it on the Iranians in a sense that you could prove it up in court. But the general assumption is that it was conducted by Iranian special forces, Iranian intelligence. I mean, the Quds Force, which is sometimes described as their special operations branch, it's actually got several different operational units. One that concentrates on things going on inside Iran and then Iraq, and then they've got an external operations branch that, you know, likely, if there's a connection to the Quds Force, that's probably, I'm making a guess on that, that's probably the external operations branch is what connects to this plot that we exposed in the last few days. Now, one other thing I want to suggest to get back when I said that, you know, that besides discussing the long term that Iran and Iranian operatives have been waging this kind of shadow war for really over 30 years, there are a bunch of factions inside the Iranian government. I've seen this laid out already in the last 36 hours since this story broke, but it's worth bringing it up again. Those factions within the dictatorship, and Jim acknowledged it's kind of a peculiar dictatorship, are struggle with one another. They may agree in on the basics that theocratic dictatorship needs to survive, and they all agree on that, but who's running it, who has the influence, who is getting the largesse, that might be a nice way to put the, you know, the chief flow of corruption, that's up for grabs. And you could, here's laying out a scenario on this, is that, you know, one part of the intelligence branch is doing something so that they can set it up to make it look like another part did it. Inner services intelligence in Pakistan, the various factions in that do that to one another all the time to try to embarrass the other guy. And you could have the same kind of situation obtaining in Iran where, let's make this look like it leads back to, and this is pure speculation, Dan, to the Ayatollah Khamenei himself. I did notice on Google there was a story, I didn't read it, but a story is speculating about would this go back to the guardians of the revolution, meaning the senior Ayatollah. So who knows? I don't know what kind, as Jim said, the hard evidence, we're not going to know, or we shouldn't know because of the potential future intelligence utility of it. The drips and drabs that we've gotten. Oh yeah, well there was one other one I saw. It was supposedly a bomb, and that's, you know, there's going to be using a bomb. There would have been collateral damage, and then there are a couple of quotes attributed to the man that they've arrested. It really sounds Hollywood tough guy, where he drops an F bomb and as he dismisses any concerns about killing innocent people. It doesn't matter. You know, we're going to get the Saudi ambassador, and who knows, we may attack some other targets as well. The Israeli embassy in Washington cropped up as at least in one article I read, that was a potential target that they might have struck. Are the Iranians capable of doing it? As Jim said, they've done it. I have seen, I saw one article saying, oh, this is too unprofessional for them. I'm sorry, I've got to shake my head at that. They have their blinders and their extremists, and sometimes extremists are the most blind in their intelligence services and security services as well, and they're perfectly capable of committing an atrocity like that. So, again, I don't know that we're going to have the connections laid out to us, but look, the Iranians have been trying to develop their alliance with Venezuela. They've certainly let it be known that they've been active in other parts of South America, and the drug business funnels through Iran and Afghanistan just like it does through Mexico. So looking at a Mexican drug cartel, look at it, well, of course they're going to have contacts. You know, they have contacts with Colombians, Venezuelans, and Afghanis and Burmese and the like. That's a little way. So it's not so illogical that a Mexican drug cartel might be working to the mix, at least trying to see if they could hire a hit team to carry off such an operation.
Wow. Now, I'm interested in what your thinking is on the Mexico connection, Austin.
Well,
I just said that. Concentrate.
It's a drug.
Okay.
A drug bit. I was thinking we might get to that, and that's something that has certainly received some sensationalist component. I was asked yesterday on a local radio show here in Texas this question, and I said, "Look, if you were giving these guys credit," which I don't think they deserve, but if you were giving them credit for trying to think through an operation like this, you go and you link up with a Mexican drug cartel because it preys, P-R-E-Y-S, upon the imagination of certain folks here in the United States that are already concerned about spillover violence from Mexico's cartel war, anti-immigrant, anti-Mexican sympathies. You see how I'm building this case on this. And you could have a perception back over in Tehran that the situation here in the United States is far worse than it is. It's not as bad by any stretch as the in terms of the of a distrust of Mexico that you see in some headlines. But, you know, building it a operational case to execute this plot back in Tehran. Understand I'm making this up, Dan, but just talking about how you might see this as a diplomatic end. Oh, if we get a Mexican cartel involved in it, you could lead to a spark of U.S.-Mexico war. Now, you see that huge leap right there?
Germans tried during World War One.
Oh, yeah. Well, Jim, that's what I was thinking. I didn't go into it, but it's almost like, oh, well, wait a minute. we'll at least get the Austrians to fight us. I'm thinking about Serbs and the Black Hand, you know what I mean? And,
yeah.
But it won't go any further than that. You know, well, that one did go, but I didn't go into that on that short radio program, but that was in the back of my mind. Of course, I think that gives way too much credit to what I've seen of the operational arm that's carrying out this plot, and I think it's a grotesque misread of conditions in the United States. But look, and our dictatorships make grotesque misreadings of reality all the time, and you've got several competing factions that are all armed and suspicious of one another inside Iran. They could think, well, that might happen, and get the United States embroiled in a border war with Mexico. It's outlandish, Dan, but that's the way some of these guys could have read it. I think the most logical explanation is Iran's intel guys are in touch with heroin smugglers and drug runners all over the world. One could cynically say most intelligence agencies are at some level, and there's a connection. You could have made the connection through innumerable ways without trying to write a Hollywood plot saying, well, so-and-so spoke to Venezuela, who spoke to Colombia, or whatever. It could be just as easy as somebody in Tehran who's in the heroin business knows somebody in Mexico. See what I'm saying? We don't know. I've come up with a kind of a Hollywood plot there, but look, it's still the drug connections, okay, and they're violent guys on the ground, and you've got a cover and you've got deniability. So there you are.
Well, there have been reports in the past of radical Islamic groups using the porous border in Mexico to try to push people across. I mean, is there much credence to that?
The coyotes will take anybody that they do not think will cause them difficulty. That usually knocks out the terrorists. Something else to keep in mind is that there's been an extensive informant network. The word has gone out that if you turn over a wannabe terrorist to the FBI, you will gain great favor. And that's why you've had so many of these situations, which some people are saying were, setups. But basically, these many plots, came to the attention of the FBI because somebody informed. The plotters basically asked around for help from people they thought they could trust. But people in the, in the criminal underground, as it were, the word of mouth is, and we've discussed this in strategy page several times, because I know it for a fact. I mean, people have told me. Criminals do not want the heat from DHS. They do want as little heat as possible, obviously, but they don't want any more heat than they normally risk, in whatever scam, they're running. And terrorism is definitely a big no-no. But the other side of that coin is, if you hear about some guy looking for some help for some terrorist activity, you will flip him, because that's a get-out-of-jail card, or cash, or both.
Right.
At the same time, Al-Qaeda, and this has come out, in their how-to instructions they publish on the internet, they warn wannabe terrorists that if you're using criminals, don't let them know you're terrorists. Because it's no secret that criminals do not want to deal with terrorists. Even if you offer them a lot of money, the downside is too great. So this is what happened with Iran. Iran obviously didn't read the instructions on how to deal with the criminal underground. And this is the last thing the Mexican cartels would want to deal with. That you notice that they at least try to be. I mean, they have people who get out of hand, but they try to avoid confrontation with the United States. They have their hands full with each other and the Mexican, the federales and what have you. So they do not want to go to war with El Norte. And they especially don't want to go to war with El Norte on the grounds of they're involved in Islamic terrorism. So the Iranians, and this is probably the case, because the Iranians, we've learned a lot about Kurds, in, especially in Iraq. A lot of these guys are true believers and they're not too bright. But they feel that God is on their side, so that'll make up for all their other deficiencies. Often it does not. But as Austin pointed out, there are many different factions, even in Al-Quds. They're playing grab-ass with each other, trying to, you know, basically get mentioned in dispatches, as it were. And pulling off some crazy stunt like this in Washington, D.C., that's big. That's huge. Because the Iranians are basically feuding, and we've reported this recently, with Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda complained openly that Iran is trying to deny that the Arabs pulled off 9/11. Because Ahmadinejad keeps coming out publicly saying, you know, 9/11 was a setup, the Americans did it, the Israelis did it, Arabs had nothing to do with it. Now, this hurts Arabs because they have an inferiority thing going with the Iranians. And they feel here's another situation where the Iranians are trying to put them down. But in this case, and Al-Qaeda has never been bashful about saying, we did it. Even though a lot of Arabs were saying, no, no, Arabs could not have done that. Even after Al-Qaeda came out, they said, oh, no, that must be the Jews. You know, pretending to be Al-Qaeda. I mean, it's insane. You know, you really got to, well, maybe you don't want to, sit down with somebody from Arabia and start discussing, you know, the thought process. Now, the ones I've spoken to tend to be bicultural and they can laugh about it, but they say, look, when you go home, you basically better think like an Arab or you're going to be thrown out of the family and be in a lot of trouble. But they come over to the United States and they say, well, of course it wasn't an American plot. You know, we know all about the Islamic radicals in Saudi Arabia. They're no secret. They're a big problem, et cetera, et cetera. But, this whole business of who was responsible and the Iranians trying to deny, you know, Arab, credit, is a big deal. So the Iranians say, well, you know, we really got to get one up on those damn Arabs. And what goes better to solve that particular situation than, you know, get Arab ambassadors in sort of in Washington D.C. as well as a blown up Israeli embassy. Of course, the Iranians wouldn't take credit for it, but the world would know.
Let me just pick up on one thing. Jim's making a point in this international situation that we see acted out domestically all the time about criminals. They're looking for the best deal for themselves. They can stay out of jail, and if they can do a favor for a police force that they can cash in to save themselves in event of arrest, or in the cartel world, make a deal for my cousin, my brother, you know, my former comandante, or whatever that's in the pen in the U.S. or somewhere in Mexico. Can we work out some deal like that? And on the security level, the Department of Homeland Security, Jim mentioned, but FBI, Mexican police, if you're going to help us stop a terror attack by Islamic radicals, prosecutor may well listen to that. Fact is, I think the prosecutor would. And that's the kind of common sense thing that Jim is speaking to about criminals, and it's also why Al-Qaeda says don't deal with criminals. They're not committed extremists. Well, they just want to continue on with their crime spree and rather not get involved with the CIA and the FBI on their tails and attracting attention to them. So it's kind of common sense.
Now, what are the likely repercussions for the Iranians?
You want me to take that one first, Jim?
Yeah.
One of the things is that it gives, and I'm trying to say this in a neutral sense, it gives, they have handed the Obama administration an incident that allows the Obama administration to continue to pivot its foreign policy to a harder line Islamic revolution, I mean the Iranian Islamic revolution foreign policy line, which they've been doing really over the last, 16 to 18 months. But it gives the Obama administration a incident to say, to take to the United Nations and say, look, we've already imposed these economic and political sanctions on Iran. It is time for the Security Council to ratify the hardline sanctions that the United States is has already promulgated. Russia, you don't like Chechens setting it off in Beslan. China, despite, you know, you don't like the Uyghurs, but you are threatened by all kinds of Islamic terrorist attacks. Here's one that we trace back to Iran. It's very dead serious. So right there you have the incident that serves as a centerpiece for an entire diplomatic and economic effort against the Iranian Iranian regime. One of the other things it does at this time, too, and I'm thinking in the context of the Arab revolutions of this of this year, it reinforces the message that NATO, let's say NATO first of all, is saying to these Arab revolutionaries that the enemy back there, the enemy to your revolution, is Iran. And look, this is what they're going to do to us here in the United States. You're a militant extremist. Even I know the Iranians are Shias, but they're pumping money to Sunni radicals as well. That is the financier of the extreme forces that would undermine and subvert your revolution. Now, if that sounds like two steps away, Dan, it is a little bit, but that's the way you could. I think that's a, that's not the way you could. I think that's part of what this incident does is a take a look at them. They really are aggressive. They're aggressive globally. They're aggressive in Cairo. They're aggressive in Tunis. They're aggressive in Tripoli. They're definitely aggressive in Damascus. At some point, they're going to have to be stopped. And it becomes, therefore, for us, if you can help promote this with modernizers, liberalizers, and moderate Islamists in some of these countries, you've got an incident there to say, look, it's us against them, and the them is our own.
Jim?
The Iranians, of course, will deny everything. They always do. But as Austin points out, this, you know, it's been a gradual process. And over the years, the sanctions have increased. Indeed, they are now at somewhat catastrophic levels. India, which buys most of Iran's oil, is finding that there's no easy way for them to actually pay the Iranians because there are so many sanctions blocking Iranian access to the international banking system. We're talking billions of dollars are tied up. And there are many other smaller, you know, problems. But over the years, the Iranians have basically built the case against themselves, that they have been caught doing so many things. I mean, every month there's another indictment and prosecution of somebody trying to smuggle arms, technology to Iran or weapons components themselves. And this is happening all over the world, especially in Europe, which used to, you know, cut Iran a lot of slack. So this is, so to speak, one more nail in the coffin.
Well, I think that's a good place to end it with a nail in the coffin for the Iranians.
Well, remember, these guys are terrorist zombies, so another nail in the coffin might not really do it, but whatever it takes.
Right.
Yeah. That's a good way to end it, that's for sure.
Thank you, and we'll talk to you next time. Bye.